Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. This is Democracy Now!
It is clearly unlawful for the U.S. Navy to shoot at people hanging on to boat debris for their dear life, to kill them in cold blood because the Defense Secretary, Pete Hegseth, said kill them all. It's a war crime, it's murder, and it's unconscionable.
The Trump administration is facing growing bipartisan criticism after the White House admits the U.S. fired twice on an alleged drug boat in September in order to kill shipwrecked survivors of the first strike. We'll speak to law professor David Cole about war crimes on the high seas and the Pentagon's threats to court-martial Senator Mark Kelly for urging soldiers to disobey illegal orders. Then to Senator Bernie Sanders and New York City Mayor-elect Sohrab Mamdani as they join striking Starbucks workers on the picket line in Brooklyn.
We must build a New York where every worker can live a life of decency. We must build a New York where our words do not ring hollow as we say that this is a union town. And we must build a New York where the workers who power it are able to afford to live in it.
I just want to thank the Starbucks workers for their courage here and around this country. We are going to prevail.
Then President Trump cancels World AIDS Day commemorations while gutting AIDS health care across the globe. We'll look at what this means from Uganda to the United States. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The White House is defending the Pentagon over allegations it carried out war crimes during an attack on an alleged drug boat in the Caribbean. Last week, The Washington Post reported U.S. forces sank a vessel with 11 people aboard during a September 2nd strike, then launched a second strike to kill two survivors as they clung to the smoldering wreckage of their boat. On Monday, the White House confirmed the second strike occurred, but claimed the order to kill the survivors of the initial attack came not from Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth, as the Washington Post reported, but from Admiral Frank Mitch Bradley, who at the time was the head of JSOC, the Joint Special Operations Command. This is White House Press Secretary Carolyn Leavitt.
With respect to the strikes in question on September 2nd, Secretary Hegseth authorized Admiral Bradley to conduct these kinetic strikes. Admiral Bradley worked well within his authority and the law, directing the engagement to ensure the boat was destroyed and the threat to the United States of America was eliminated.
On Monday evening, Pentagon Secretary Hegseth wrote on social media, quote, "Let's make one thing crystal clear. Admiral Mitch Bradley is an American hero, a true professional, and has my 100% support," unquote. His comments came after Democrats and some Republican lawmakers said Hegseth may have committed war crimes if he ordered U.S. forces to attack survivors. We'll have more about war crimes on the high seas after headlines. We'll speak with Georgetown law professor David Cole. Israeli forces killed two Palestinian teenagers in separate incidents Monday as they carried out raids across the occupied West Bank. In Hebron, soldiers fatally shot 17-year-old Mohamed Tarek Mohamed Al-Zugair, whom they accused of carrying out a car-ramming attack that injured an Israeli soldier. Elsewhere, 18-year-old Mohamed Raslan Mahmoud Asmar was shot during a raid on his village northwest of Ramallah. Witnesses say the teen was left to bleed out as Israeli forces barred Red Crescent medics from approaching. The soldiers then seized his lifeless body. Last week, the United Nations reported more than 1,000 Palestinians have been killed by Israeli settlers and soldiers in the occupied West Bank and East Jerusalem since October 7, 2023. Meanwhile, in Gaza, Israeli forces killed at least one person in the Bereij refugee camp Monday in the latest violation of the ceasefire deal that took effect on October 10th. In another violation of the truce, Palestinians report Israeli forces continue to cross the so-called yellow line on a near daily basis. This week, a coalition of 12 Israeli human rights groups concluded in a new report that 2025 has already become the deadliest and most destructive year for Palestinians since 1967. Pope Leo is in Lebanon, the nation with the highest proportion of Christians in the Middle East, as part of his first foreign trip as pontiff. Earlier today, he held mass at the site of the 2020 Beirut port explosion, which killed hundreds of people and injured thousands. Pope Leo also met with the families of those killed in the explosion.
In an age when coexistence can seem like a distant dream, the people of Lebanon, while embracing different religions, stand as a powerful reminder that fear, distrust, and prejudice do not have the final word, and that unity, reconciliation, and peace are possible.
Before arriving in Lebanon, Pope Leo over the weekend said that a solution to the Palestinian-Israeli conflict must include a Palestinian state. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has asked Israeli President Isaac Herzog to grant him a pardon from corruption charges and to bring an end to his trial. Netanyahu has been charged with fraud and accepting bribes in three separate cases accusing him of exchanging political favors with wealthy supporters. On Monday, protesters gathered outside the Tel Aviv courthouse where Netanyahu's trial is being held.
There's no such thing as being exonerated from files from being a criminal. And he is a criminal, and he should be standing on trial just like every other citizen in Israel.
Netanyahu is the only sitting prime minister in Israeli history to stand trial. President Trump's envoy, Steve Witkoff, and son-in-law Jared Kushner are set to meet with Russian President Vladimir Putin in Moscow today. Witkoff and Kushner are expected to offer Putin a U.S.-backed peace proposal that was revised during negotiations between American and Ukrainian officials in Miami over the weekend. This follows reporting from the Wall Street Journal on Witkoff's October meeting with Kirill Dmitriev, head of Russia's sovereign wealth fund and Putin's hand-picked negotiator. Dmitriev reportedly offered a plan for U.S. companies to tap nearly $300 billion of Russian central bank assets frozen in Europe. Meanwhile, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky met French President Emmanuel Macron Monday and is in Ireland today for meetings. Amidst the diplomatic activity, Russia launched a missile attack on the Ukrainian city of Dnipro, killing four people and injuring 40. Meanwhile, Putin is claiming victory after Russian forces captured the Ukrainian town of Pokrovsk in the eastern Donbas region after fierce fighting for over a year. Pokrovsk was once a strategic logistics hub for the Ukrainian army. President Trump vowed there will be, quote, hell to pay in Honduras if election officials tampered with the results of Sunday's presidential elections after threatening to cut off U.S. aid to Honduras if his favored candidate doesn't win. As of Tuesday morning, just over half the ballots have been counted, and it's not clear when a final result will be announced. Trump-backed candidate Nasrias Fouda of the right-wing National Party held a razor-thin lead of just 515 votes over his rival, Salvador Nasrallah. This comes as President Trump pledged to pardon Honduras's former president, Juan Orlando Hernandez, who's currently serving a 45-year jail term in the U.S. for cocaine trafficking. Speaking to reporters aboard Air Force One on Sunday, President Trump was asked why he would pardon a convicted drug trafficker.
You've made so clear how you want to keep drugs out of the U.S.
Right.
Can you explain more about why you would pardon a notorious drug trafficker?
Well, I don't know who you're talking about.
Juan Orlando Hernandez.
Well, I was told I was
In Haiti, heavily armed gangs killed nearly a dozen people as they set fire to homes and forced hundreds of survivors to flee over the weekend. The attack took place in Haiti's central region. Half the area is now under gang control. One of Haiti's police unions called it, quote, one of the greatest security failures in modern Haitian history, unquote. This comes as the Trump administration announced it's ending temporary protected status, TPS, for 340,000 Haitians living in the U.S. by February 3rd. In Indiana, Republican lawmakers have unveiled a new voting map that's designed to hand their party all nine of Indiana's seats in the U.S. House of Representatives. The new map would divide districts in Indianapolis and the Chicago suburbs that have consistently voted for Democrats and are home to Indiana's largest concentrations of non-white voters. Indiana Democrats blasted the maps as racially gerrymandered and introduced a bill seeking to ban mid-decade redistricting. This comes amidst Republican efforts to redraw maps in Texas, Missouri, Utah, Ohio, North Carolina, and elsewhere. Meanwhile, some Democratic-controlled states, led by California, are moving to redistrict congressional maps in favor of their party. In Tennessee, voters in the state's 7th congressional district are casting ballots today in a special election to replace Republican Congressmember Mark Green, who resigned from Congress in July to pursue a business venture. Republican Matt Van Epps faces a strong challenge by Democratic State Representative Afton Bain in a district that President Trump won by 22 percentage points last November. On Monday, House Speaker Mike Johnson flew to Tennessee to rally support for Van Epps, with President Trump calling in via speakerphone to endorse him. A federal appeals court has ruled President Trump's former personal attorney, Alina Haba, is serving unlawfully as U.S. attorney for New Jersey. In their unanimous ruling Monday, three judges with the U.S. Third Circuit Court of Appeals ruled the Trump administration broke the law as it maneuvered to keep Haba installed as the top federal prosecutor in New Jersey after her 120-day interim appointment expired in July. This comes just days after a federal judge ruled that acting U.S. Attorney Lindsey Halligan, another former Trump personal lawyer with no experience prosecuting criminal cases, was also installed to her position unlawfully. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer said three of his offices in New York were targeted with emailed bomb threats alleging the 2020 election was rigged, with the subject line MAGA. This comes as Arizona Democratic Senator Mark Kelly announced he and his wife Gabby Giffords have been receiving more death threats since President Trump called for his execution after Senator Kelly and other Democratic lawmakers urged U.S. service members to refuse illegal orders.
We take these threats very seriously, and I take, you know, the threats from this president seriously. How many times in our country's history have you heard a president of the United States say that members of the Senate and the House should be hanged and executed? I mean, I can't think of one.
We'll have more on this story after headlines. And President Trump has commuted the 7-year prison sentence of private equity executive David Gentile, who defrauded over 10,000 investors of around $1.6 billion. Gentile was convicted of securities and wire fraud last year and was just days into serving his prison sentence. According to prosecutors, his victims were described as small business owners, farmers, veterans, teachers, and nurses. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now!'s Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
The White House is facing growing bipartisan criticism over its targeting of boats in the Caribbean and Eastern Pacific that it says are carrying drugs, though have not presented a shred of evidence. The Washington Post recently reported Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth ordered the killing of two people who survived an initial strike on a suspected drug boat off the coast of Trinidad on September 2nd. According to the Post, Hegseth gave a verbal order to, quote, kill everybody, unquote. Many legal experts and lawmakers said such an order would be a war crime. This is independent Maine Senator Angus King on CNN Monday morning.
The law is clear. If the facts are, as have been alleged, that there was a second strike specifically to kill the survivors in the war, in the water, that's a stone-cold war crime. It's also murder.
On Monday afternoon, the White House confirmed the second strike on the boat did occur, but claimed the order came not from Hegseth, but from Admiral Frank Mitch Bradley, who at the time was the head of JSOC. That's the Joint Special Operations Command. White House Press Secretary Carolyn Leavitt was questioned about the strikes.
To be clear, does the administration deny that that second strike happened, or did it happen and the administration denies that Secretary Hegseth gave the order?
The latter is true, Abe, and I have a statement to read for you here. President Trump and Secretary Hegseth have made it clear that presidentially designated narco-terrorist groups are subject to lethal targeting in accordance with the laws of war. With respect to the strikes in question on September 2nd, Secretary Hegseth authorized Admiral Bradley to conduct these kinetic strikes. Admiral Bradley worked well within his authority and the law, directing the engagement to ensure the boat was destroyed and the threat to the United States of America was eliminated.
On Monday night, Secretary Hegseth wrote online, "Let's make one thing crystal clear. Admiral Mitch Bradley is an American hero, a true professional, and has my 100% support. I stand by him and the combat decisions he has made on the September 2nd mission and all others since," unquote. While he was showing his 100% support, many took his statement to make a distinction between him, Hegseth, and Bradley himself as to who gave the order. This all comes as Hegseth is threatening to court-martial Democratic Senator Mark Kelly, who's a former naval officer. Kelly and five other Democrats, all military or intelligence veterans, recently appeared in a video urging soldiers to disobey illegal orders.
I'm Senator Alyssa Slotkin.
Senator Mark Kelly.
Representative Chris DeLuzio.
Congresswoman Maggie Goodlander.
Representative Chrissy Houlihan.
Congressman Jason Crow.
I was a captain in the United States Navy.
Former CIA officer.
Former Navy.
Former paratrooper and Army Ranger.
Former intelligence officer.
Former Air Force.
We want to speak directly to members of the military
and the intelligence community
who take risks each day
to keep Americans safe.
We know you are under enormous stress and pressure right now.
Americans trust their military.
But that trust is at risk.
This administration is pitting our uniformed military
and intelligence community professionals
against American citizens.
Like us, you all swore an oath
to protect and defend this Constitution.
Right now, the threats to our Constitution aren't just coming from abroad,
but from right here at home.
Our laws are clear. You can refuse illegal orders.
You can refuse illegal orders.
You must refuse illegal orders.
No one has to carry out orders that violate the law or our Constitution.
President Trump accused the Democrats of appearing in that video of engaging in, quote, seditious behavior punishable by death. On Monday, Senator Mark Kelly revealed he and his wife, Gabby Giffords, have received death threats following President Trump's threats. Yes, that family knows violence well. Gabby Giffords is the former Arizona congressmember who was shot in the head in a mass shooting in a Tucson shopping mall when she was meeting with constituents years ago. We're joined now by David Cole, professor at the Georgetown University Law Center, former national legal director of the ACLU. His recent piece for The New York Times is headlined, "Mark Kelly is being investigated for telling the truth." We last spoke to you in October after your widely read piece in the New York Review of Books headlined "Getting Away with Murder" about the boat strikes. So these two issues, to say the least, are coming together very strongly this week. One, you have the revelations in The Washington Post of the second boat strike killing the shipwreck, the two men who were hanging on for dear life to this boat when they hit it again. And you have the attacks on Mark Kelly to court-martial him after he and others talked about soldiers not obeying illegal orders. Talk about the merging of these two issues and specifically what's happening to Kelly right now.
So, you know, this entire operation from the outset is illegal. It is not legal to engage in premeditated targeting of people because you believe they're engaged in criminal activity. We have a system in this country for trying people, convicting them, sentencing them, even if you are found to have been guilty of smuggling massive amounts of drugs, you cannot be executed. The death penalty is limited for people who have actually committed a homicide. The president says this is a war, but he's mixing metaphor with reality. The war on drugs is a metaphor, like the war on cancer. It doesn't allow us to kill people who are carrying drugs, just as the war on crime doesn't allow us to kill people who are criminals. What we've now learned is that not only is the entire operation illegal from the outset, but it is they're now actually targeting survivors of these strikes, people who pose no threat whatsoever to the United States, are seeking to hang on for dear life, and the military is targeting them and killing them in cold blood. It is getting closer and closer to My Lai. And yet, when members of Congress say to members of the military, you know, you have an obligation not to follow illegal orders, what does the president do? Not say, hey, that's right. These orders are problematic. We should rethink them. We should pay attention to all the lawyers who told us they were illegal before we push them off the table. Instead, he goes after Mark Kelly, a senator, a former a combat veteran, for merely telling the truth, and a former astronaut for merely telling the truth. It is a true statement that following orders is no defense to a war crime. And killing civilians who are not engaged in armed conflict against us is a war crime. This is criminal activity from the get-go, doubly criminal when you start targeting survivors. They have to rethink this policy, not claim that their critics are engaged in sedition.
But David, I'm wondering, all of these boat attacks are actually creating a climate where basically the United States, the people of the United States, get used to the fact that the United States is going to war, is going to militarily attack Venezuela. For instance, The Guardian just reported recently that Trinidad and Tobago, which is right next door to Venezuela, has 100 Marines that have installed radar. There was a quote from a political leader in Trinidad and Tobago, David Abdullah, of the Movement for Social Justice, that accuses their government of being complicit in these extrajudicial killings in the Caribbean. I'm wondering, under what pretext do you think the United States will use to actually militarily attack Venezuela?
Well, this entire operation is a pretext. There is no war going on. We are not under attack. No one has been drafted to fight the enemy. President Trump has taken a crime problem and has said, I'm going to use the military to solve the crime problem. How? By killing people in cold blood. And Pete Hegseth translates that to say to his folks, kill everybody. And so then Admiral Bradley responds to that by ordering the killing even of survivors who are merely holding on for dear life. This is a crimes that the government is trying to justify as acts of war. If they go to war with Venezuela, that too will be a war crime. It will be an act of aggression against a country which has not attacked us. The fact that people are maybe probably are smuggling drugs into this country from Venezuela. Doesn't distinguish that country from Mexico, from Canada, from many other countries into which drugs are from which drugs are smuggled. It doesn't give us the authority to kill Canadians. It doesn't give us the authority to kill Mexicans. It doesn't give us the authority to kill Venezuelans. And it certainly doesn't give us the authority to go to war with a country.
I'm wondering also about another major legal battle of the Trump administration, the admission of the Justice Department that it was Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem who made the decision to deport a group of Venezuelan men to the notorious mega prison complex in El Salvador, ignoring a judge's order to keep them in custody. What do you make of this?
Outrageous. Outrageous. We are a country of law. That means that government officials, just like you and I, have to follow court orders. In this case, the Trump administration, again using this pretext of a war, said we're going to deport hundreds, more than 100 Venezuelans on the assertion that they are part of Tren de Aragua, a Venezuelan drug gang, which Trump says is engaged in armed conflict against us, notwithstanding the fact that no one ever heard of this group before Trump made this this ridiculous assertion. The ACLU went to court to challenge that on an emergency basis. The judge held a hearing. He told them on no uncertain terms, do not remove these people. And if the planes have taken off, turn the planes around. And if they land in El Salvador, do not let the people off. Bring them back. And instead, Kristi Noem, the head of the Department of Homeland Security, tells her people to defy that order and to continue the plane flights to El Salvador and to turn these men over to the El Salvadoran authorities, where they were put in essentially a torture prison. That is not how the rule of law is supposed to operate. I think it's going to lead to contempt charges against Kristi Noem and the others who engaged in that blatantly illegal disregard of the judge's order.
I wanted to continue on that line of the deporting of people. You have Kilmar Abrego-Garcia, right, who a brave Justice Department lawyer said in court, because he had to tell the truth, that it was not clear why he was even sent to SECOT. Now he's being faced with being sent to one African country after another, a continent that he is not from. They are not backing down on deporting him. I wanted to ask about that. And also on this issue, we just had a headline yesterday on this young woman, a Babson College student, deported to Honduras this weekend while she was trying to fly from Boston to Texas to surprise her family for Thanksgiving. 19-year-old Annie Lucia Lopez Beloza was told there was an issue with her boarding pass at the gate before she was detained by immigration officials. The day after she was arrested, a federal judge issued an emergency order prohibiting the government from removing her from the United States for 72 hours. But instead, she was deported and is now in Honduras, where she hasn't been in many years. She did not grow up there.
So I think we have to ask President Trump, have you no sense of decency? Have you no shame? The kinds of cruelty that he is imparting on people who have lived here their entire lives, on Mr. Abrego-Garcia, who was admittedly a mistaken deportation. And instead of admitting their mistake and saying sorry, they're now seeking to send him to a third country, to Africa, a place that he does not know, has never lived. This is just beyond the pale. It is absolutely beyond the pale. And I think the American people recognize that what the administration is doing in the name of immigration enforcement is far too harsh, far too cruel. It is not singling out criminals. It is not singling out people at the border. It is taking college kids. It is taking people turning up to their interviews and to their court appearances and spiriting them off to countries they never came
David
from.
David Cole, we have this breaking news. The former Honduran president, Juan Orlando Hernandez, was just released from prison in the United States, where he was serving a 45-year prison sentence for drug trafficking and firearms charges. His brother, Tony Hernandez, also serving a life sentence here in the United States. He was convicted, the former president, of sending in tons of cocaine into the United States.